You're listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. And once again, it is time for your daily dose of recovery, brought to you by David. Welcome to the season finale of Daily Dose of Recovery. Wow, that went by fast. You know, the longer I'm in the state of serenity, the more I find myself busy each day doing my best to be productive with my time. I also find that I have more confidence in myself and in my weight loss journey. I know that time is going to move by at a constant rate, even though at times it will feel slow, and at other times, usually when a deadline is approaching, it will feel fast, but speaking from my own experience with abstaining from compulsive overeating, I now have a constant feeling of happiness that is a mixture of pride, enjoyment, and satisfaction at seeing projects come to completion, especially with this first season of the podcast. I'm very grateful to each of you who have taken time to listen to my recovery radio station here, and I hope each episode offered you some hope, strength, and determination to take things one day at a time. I wanted to spend this episode talking about many of the interesting things that occur in December. There is actually a lot more that goes on than just the well-known religious holidays like Christmas and Hanukkah. I know for myself and many others, the holidays can be a challenge. Those of us in recovery find holidays difficult to continue abstaining from compulsive eating or other forms of addiction. I mentioned during the Thanksgiving and Halloween episodes that I feel that there is so much more to every holiday than just drinking or eating. This is especially true for the holidays that happen in December, and to help, I'd like to share with all of you some fun facts and history regarding the many celebrations that go on throughout December. Let's start off with the origins of the month itself. December is the 12th and last month in our calendar. However, it was originally the 10th month of the Roman calendar until 153 BCE. The name December comes from the Latin word decem, meaning 10. Back in Roman times, the calendar only had 10 months and began with March of all months. Prior to being reorganized, the month of December originally consisted of 30 days. In the Julian calendar, an extra day was added to December and other months throughout the year in order to keep the month of February shortened to 28 days because the Romans thought February was a very unlucky month. Now, the Romans celebrated the Feast of the Saturnalia, which honored the agricultural god Saturn. This was a week-long feast held in December, which included the observance of the winter solstice. Saturnalia was celebrated by feasting, giving gifts, having games, and general merrymaking. What does this remind us of? Point of fact, there are many elements of the Saturnalia festival, such as the gift-giving and decorating of homes with greenery and lights, that were a direct influence on our modern Christmas celebrations. The Saturnalia was held from December 17th to the 23rd, and it was so important that it was believed that to start a war during this time would have been a sin against the gods. Schools were closed, courts were out of session. Most folks were on holiday for the week. It was a 7-day period of peace and candle lighting. There's a lot of music associated with this time of year and the holidays in general. One of my favorite songs is Cool Yule by Louis Armstrong. I really do love the big band jazz sound of that song. But what the heck is a Yule, and why is it associated with winter? Well, Yule is a word derived from the Norse jol or jul. Not sure if I'm pronouncing those right, but I do enjoy how they are spelled. Yule refers to the pre-Christian festival observed in Scandinavia at the time of the winter solstice. The Yule celebrations included feasting and caroling, as well as ceremonial burning of logs to welcome the sun back to the world. There are actually a lot of holiday traditions organized in regards to the winter solstice, which occurs once a year in each hemisphere. The Northern Hemisphere experiences it in December, and the Southern Hemisphere in June. The winter solstice marks the start of each hemisphere's winter season. When one hemisphere is experiencing their winter solstice, the other is simultaneously experiencing their summer solstice. Thankfully, after we reach the winter solstice, the days begin to grow longer and longer until we reach the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. Thus, while the winter solstice may mean the start of winter, it also means the eventual return of more sunlight. Hallelujah! Because I miss the sunshine a lot during this time of year. The winter solstice holds significance across a variety of cultures as it signals the changing of the seasons. In some cultures, the solstice traditionally marked the midway point of the season rather than the start of it, which explains why holidays such as Midsummer Day are celebrated around the first day of summer. Here's another fun fact about the solstice. On the day of the solstice, go outside and stand there at noon and look at your shadow. If you're observing your shadow on the winter solstice, then that's the longest shadow that you'll ever cast all year long at the noon hour. If you repeat this activity again on the day of the summer solstice, you'll see almost no shadow at all. The word solstice comes to us from Latin. Sol, meaning sun, and sister, meaning to stand still. So, loosely translated, solstice means sun stand still. Why does it mean that? Well, for a few days before and after the solstice, the sun's path across the sky appears to freeze. The change in its noontime elevation is so slight that the sun's path seems to stay the same or stand still. Very cool if you ask me, but I'm an English major and writer, so I enjoy etymology or the study of word origins and meanings. There's always a reason behind a word. Nothing just comes into being without purpose. A good lesson to remember for all things, I think. There are also a few lesser-known holidays in December, such as St. Lucy's Day, which occurs on December 13th. St. Lucy was a 4th century Italian martyr. Her name is derived from the Latin word lux, meaning light, and thus she is associated with a festival of lights. St. Lucy's Day is celebrated especially in Italy and in Sweden, where the oldest, or sometimes youngest, daughter dons a crown of burning candles and wakes the family with coffee and sweet rolls seasoned with saffron. Another obscure holiday that occurs in December, at least for those of us living in the United States, is Bill of Rights Day, which honors the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution. Those amendments were ratified on December 15, 1791, and 150 years later, President Franklin D. Roosevelt first proclaimed Bill of Rights Day in 1941. This is a day for Americans to fly the U.S. flag and to reflect upon the significance of the Bill of Rights, as those laws protect basic human rights, including freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and peaceful assembly. Though I suspect that the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor a week earlier may have had some additional influence on President Roosevelt's declaration, since that event officially brought the United States into World War II, and it always helps to remind people what they are fighting to protect at the beginning of a major conflict. Alright, let's shift gears and consider some of the modern traditions, like holiday cards and the decorating of Christmas trees. The very first Christmas card was printed in London in 1843 by Sir Henry Cole, who hired artist John Calcott Horsley to design a holiday card that he could send to his friends. Making dozens or hundreds of your own personalized cards was very time-consuming. So Sir Henry Cole wanted to make things easier by designing a card that has blank spaces after the words to and from. Years later, a Boston-based printer named Lewis Prang introduced the Christmas card to the American public in 1875. Lewis Prang was an immigrant born in what is now Poland, and he was the first to make commercially printed holiday greeting cards available. His intention was to share the arts with the public in his adopted land. The popularity of his Christmas cards was immediate. By 1881, Prang was reportedly printing 5 million Christmas cards a year, which is why he is often called the father of the American Christmas card. Prang's earliest cards were just simple flower designs with the words, "Merry Christmas." Speaking of the phrase, "Merry Christmas," here's a fun fact. "Happy Christmas," which is still traditional in England, replaced "Merry Christmas" because clergymen decided that "merry" was associated with inebriation, and we can't have that during Christmas now, can we? As for the Christmas tree, this tradition traces back to Germany and other parts of Northern Europe. The use of the evergreen tree as a Christmas tree was seen as a symbolic promise that the sun would halt its wintry decline in the sky, and that spring and summer would return. So you see, Christmas trees are linked to the winter solstice. Cool, huh? I found one article that claimed that the first American Christmas tree can be credited to a Hessian soldier by the name of Hendrik Rodmore, who was captured at the Battle of Bennington in 1776. He then went to work on a farm in Windsor Lock, Connecticut, where he put up and decorated a Christmas tree. Whereas another article accredited the rise of this popular holiday tradition to the influx of German immigrants to the United States in the 1830s. The first Christmas tree retail lot was established in 1851 by a Pennsylvanian named Mark Carr, who hauled two ox sleds loaded with Christmas trees from the Catskill Mountains to the sidewalks of New York City. Another fun fact about Christmas trees is that on December 22, 1882, Edward Johnson, an associate of Thomas Edison, created the first string of Christmas lights. The first president to set up a Christmas tree inside the White House was Franklin Pierce, though there is some dispute over whether this was an official White House Christmas tree. So some historians point to Benjamin Harrison placing a Christmas tree in the White House as the first official White House Christmas tree. During the holiday season, you might see the Christmas tree lighting ceremony at the White House reported on the news. This is a tradition that was started by President Calvin Coolidge. And another fun fact about the White House and Christmas, Jacqueline Kennedy started the tradition of a decorative theme for the White House Christmas tree. Her first theme was The Nutcracker, a play that I was able to see in person this year because all my progress at losing weight meant that I have my theater tickets back. So when did Santa Claus become so involved in Christmas? Well, before Christianity, the Germanic people celebrated Yule, which I already mentioned. Their god, Woden, who many identify with the Norse god Odin, had a long white beard and rode a horse during his ghostly hunts through the midwinter sky. It is thought that this German mythology later merged with the Dutch traditions regarding Saint Nicholas to create the image of Santa Claus. In the United States, the image of Saint Nick, or Santa Claus, as a plump and jolly old elf was heavily influenced by the famous poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, more commonly called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, which was published anonymously in December of 1823. However, Clement Clark Moore is credited as the author, though his authorship has been disputed in recent years. The first drawings of Santa Claus are credited to political cartoonists such as Thomas Nast. His drawings of Santa appeared in Harper's Weekly magazine from January 1863 until 1886. Nast drew Santa for 30 years, depicting him as a cheerful, rotund old elf. Over time, Nast changed the color of Santa's coat to the red he's known for today. The modern image of Santa as an even bigger-than-life figure with sparkling eyes, a merry smile, and a white beard were popularized through Handan Sunbloom's depiction of him for the Coca-Cola Company's Christmas advertising in the 1930s. So I've been talking about the holiday season from a United States point of view, and I'd like to shift gears and talk about our neighbors to the north. In Canada, they have a holiday called Boxing Day, which occurs annually on December 26th. This is a public holiday celebrated in Britain, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and other Commonwealth countries. Boxing Day is a centuries-old gift-giving day that originated in Britain. It was custom on December 26th for tradesmen to collect their Christmas boxes, which were gifts of money or goods given to them in return for reliable service all year. The custom arose because servants who would have to wait on their bosses during Christmas Day were then allowed to visit with their families the next day, and employers would give them boxes to take home containing gifts, bonuses, and sometimes leftovers. During the Victorian era, Boxing Day evolved. It became an occasion for church parishioners to deposit donations. The money in the boxes was given to the poor. Sporting events have taken place on Boxing Day for centuries. Fox hunting was once a tradition. Today, more popular Boxing Day sporting activities include watching horse races and football matches against local rivals. Charity and giving to the poorer amongst us is still a big part of Boxing Day. Some folks participate in charity runs. The Boxing Day Dip is another charity event where people in fancy dress swim in the sea on Boxing Day. Brrr. Another holiday that occurs after Christmas is Kwanzaa, which is a week-long holiday held annually from December 26th to January 1st. Fundamentally, Kwanzaa celebrates family, culture, community, and the harvest. Kwanzaa focuses on seven essential principles, which are each represented by one day of the seven-day celebration. Despite the fact that it is often thought of as a substitute for Christmas or Hanukkah, Kwanzaa is not a religious holiday, and families who celebrate Kwanzaa often celebrate it in addition. You may be surprised to learn that the modern day of Kwanzaa is a relatively new creation, though it has its roots in traditions that go back generations. Kwanzaa was created with the community and cultural spirit of traditional African harvest festivals in mind. But Kwanzaa itself is uniquely North American, being celebrated mainly in the United States, Canada, and the Caribbean. During Kwanzaa, people traditionally decorate their house with straw mats, ears of corn, and a candle holder called a kinara, which is adorned with red, green, and black candles. Red is said to represent ancestry and unity, black, the people, and green, the fertile land. A candle is lit for each day of Kwanzaa, and celebrants may also exchange gifts. The entire celebration is capped with a feast on December 31st, which is usually held at a community center and features traditional music and dancing. Which brings me to the various traditions and celebrations associated with the New Year. Many New Year's traditions that we take for granted actually date from ancient times. Making lots of noise to drive away bad luck and evil spirits is a tradition attached to the New Year. In China, they use firecrackers to rout the forces of darkness. In Denmark, they throw plates and glasses against neighbors' front doors to banish evil spirits. In the United States, many people watch the ball drop in New York's Times Square and celebrate with small firecrackers and popping noises at midnight, much to the disapproval of household pets across the country, I'm sure. Most people think of Christmas as the major gift-giving holiday, but New Year's Day was once the time to swap presents as well. Gifts of coins and gilded nuts were a way to start the new year in Rome. Early Egyptians traded flasks. The Persians exchanged eggs, since eggs were a symbol of fertility. In Scotland, silverware is traditionally exchanged for good luck in the coming year. Furthermore, in Scotland, they believe that the first person to cross the threshold in one's home is an indication of what the year to come will be. Although sources vary, the general consensus that I could find seems to be that if the first person to cross the threshold is tall and dark, then the new year will be a good one. The practice of making New Year resolutions is said to have begun with the Babylonians as early as 2600 BCE. It is another way that we reflect on the past and plan ahead. Also, something we tend to associate with New Year's Eve is that a lot of people think of, like, champagne as something you should drink, but there are other traditions in different parts of the world. In Spain, for example, they drink cava, which is a sparkling white wine. Also in Spain, people attempt to eat 12 grapes during the 12 strokes at midnight. The tradition holds that if a person succeeds before the chimes stop, then they will have good luck for all 12 months of the new year. In England, wassail, which is a punch-like drink, is served. The Scottish version of wassail is a spiced hot pint, both of which I will have to try someday, seeing as "Here We Come A-Wassailing" is one of my favorite Christmas songs. In Swiss homes, dollops of whipped cream, symbolizing the richness of the year to come, are dropped on the floor and allowed to remain there. Now that's a level of food neutrality to be proud of, though not the best way to keep your home clean. There are also traditions of eating ring-shaped treats as a symbolic gesture of coming full circle in hopes of finding good fortune in the new year. The Dutch and Irish, for example, have such traditions. In Jewish tradition, the new year is celebrated with apples dipped in honey. Oh yes, people from all kinds of different cultures and backgrounds love their holiday treats to help them celebrate this time of year, which makes it particularly challenging for those of us in OA. So many traditions and activities across time and space and a variety of holidays. They vary in meaning and origins, but each has a celebration that speaks of kindness, hope, and caring for each other. You can choose to do many positive things with your time, even during the holidays. Something I've rediscovered during my weight loss journey, because, yeah, I had forgotten that in coming together, people are happier and stronger. When I was deep in my addiction to the food and gaining lots of weight rapidly, I did not look forward to the holiday season. The fall and early winter were times of depression, loneliness, shame, and painful regret. It began at Halloween with great amounts of self-loathing because I could not wear a costume. My shame and anger dominated my routine from October 31st to January 1st. During this time, my emotions tore and clawed at my thoughts like I had some wild tiger clinging to my back while I was desperately holding on to a cliffside face hundreds of feet above the ground. It was painful, it was miserable, and it drove me to the food because, as we all know, there's lots of food available during the holidays. And since the holidays made me feel this way, I wasn't exactly the best son, brother, or friend to be around. I wasn't exactly a Grinch, more like an angry version of Eeyore. And yes, I realize that means I was being a jackass, I admit it. I loathed the holidays because of the stress they conjured up in my life, although I now realize that it was me who was doing the conjuring and not the holidays. I didn't do much for the holidays when I was overeating because I wasn't sleeping well, so naturally I didn't have much energy. I didn't really decorate my house, I didn't want to go and engage in caroling or out to see the Christmas lights. Plus, my overall negative view didn't exactly make me a person who spread good wishes and cheer. To my great regret, there were even a few years there where I spent Christmas completely alone for a variety of reasons, but I definitely played a key role in my ending up alone those years, which is a fate I would not wish on anyone. If you are in recovery and you are fortunate enough to have family to spend the holidays with, then this is a chance for your serenity to shine and increase the merrymaking when you are with your loved ones. If you are alone or your family is not close, then it is easy to feel despair around the holidays. But remember the acceptance and friendships you find in OA. Don't allow yourself to become isolated during the holidays. Do outreach. Write in your journal, pray or meditate, whichever you are most comfortable with, and make sure that you choose to do holiday activities that make you feel good about yourself and your home. It is important that when the holidays are here, that we participate in them, because we need to be active in living our lives. Don't sit there like a lump of coal because the holidays are meant to be celebrated with more than food or shopping. And as it is in recovery, it is incumbent upon us, each as individuals, to be an active participant in our own progress and joy. Rule 30. Yeah, you knew I was going to mention one of my rules, and I hope you find it helpful. Rule 30. What I focus on is what will be. If I focus on the crap, then there will be more of it. That rule, by the way, comes from the person represented by the cheetah on the cover art for HP3R. She is someone who, at the start of my abstinence, inspired me to keep mine going by continuing to maintain hers. She is a great and powerful friend who will always have my respect. Well, that brings us to the end, dear listener. Thank you again for taking the time to listen to both Daily Dose of Recovery and Recovery Buddies here on HP3R. Stay safe, stay warm. Remember that you are worthy of recovery and living a healthy life. I hope you'll tune in for Season 2. Until then, have fun and a lighthearted chuckle. You've been listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. If you'd like to send us an email, then write to hp3rpodcast@gmail.com. Remember to check back for new episodes on Mondays and Thursdays, right here on HP3R.